Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Now to contemporary American poetry. When the New York Times wrote about Harvard English professor and poetry critic Stephen Burt a few years ago, the writer said that being a major poetry critic is a dubious honor, almost like being an expert on polka. Yet, at many of life's major events, we use poetry. So the paper concluded that Burt's role is important because, quote, we mistrust our own tastes, so we rely on the taste maker. Stephen Burt has written a new book compiling a picture of contemporary poetry. It's titled The Poem Is You, 60 Contemporary American Poems and How to Read Them. Professor, welcome to Radio Boston.
Happy to be here.
So you compare putting together this book of contemporary American poetry to traveling across the U.S. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, people who read poetry but not often, or who don't but think maybe they should, wonder why they should or what poetry is for. And the answer is that depends on the poem and it depends on you. If you think of contemporary poetry as a country that you can visit and you're wondering why should I go there, the answer is, well, it depends on who you are and what you're looking for. And contemporary American poetry is a vast and various country, like the United States itself. If you have one set of tastes, you might go to one poet, one style. And if you have another, you might go to another with another style. Just as the people who go to New Hampshire for camping aren't the same as the people who go to the Gulf of Mexico to fish.
Right. So how do you choose the 60 poems in that book? And is there an overarching thought process that you're trying to put together, or an objective, really, in putting together this book?
The objective is to introduce some of what I see as the best and the most attractive poems that we've got. I used to write travel guides a while ago. I had the good fortune to work on Let's Go USA a while ago.
Oh, my gosh.
And in a way, this is a travel guide. It doesn't sound like a travel guide. I didn't have to go a lot of places to write it. But it has some of the same objectives, frankly, although I hope it will have a little bit longer shelf life. When I realized that I wanted to write this, I knew who some of the poets were going to be. And I knew what a few of the poems were going to be. I knew that Ashbery was going to be the first poem and that it was going to be that poem, Paradoxes and Oxymorons. I knew Laura Kosciuszko was going to be in there. I knew Terence Hayes was going to be in there. I had favorites that I couldn't live without. And as I went from 20 poets and 10 poems to 30 poets and 25 poems to 50 and then to 60, I kept looking to see, who have I left out? What have I left out? And all 60 poems are poems I admire a great deal. I believe in them. I believe in their ways of using language. I believe in their music. But they're different one from another. And in trying to figure out what to put in, what poem number 52 would be, what poem number 56 would be, I did think about length, about topic, about sound, about what kinds of poems. Is there a sestina? Are there certain kinds of free verse? Is there a certain kind of prose poem? And of course, I thought about demographics as well. Does the poem, as the first President Clinton said, look like America? Does the book look like America? Does it look enough like America? Can I do something about the sort of historical whiteness and the historical maleness of earlier anthologies? So that was a factor.
Well, you know, you mentioned John Ashbery, and I'm wondering if you could, it's the poem that really gives your book its title.
That's right.
Can you read it, some of it now?
Certainly.
Okay, go ahead.
Paradoxes and Oxymorons. This poem is concerned with language on a very plain level. Look at it talking to you. You look out a window or pretend to fidget. You have it, but you don't have it. You miss it. It misses you. You miss each other. The poem is sad because it wants to be yours and cannot. What's a plain level? It is that and other things, bringing a system of them into play. Play? Well, actually, yes. But I consider play to be a deeper outside thing, a dreamed role pattern, as in the division of grace these long August days without proof, open-ended. And before you know, it gets lost in the steam and chatter of typewriters. It has been played once more. I think you exist only to tease me into doing it on your level, and then you aren't there or have adopted a different attitude. And the poem has set me softly down beside you. The poem is you.
Very lovely. So, what's your take on that?
Well, it's a poem about how to read it and how to read this kind of poem and how to read poetry generally. And it contains, as the title Paradoxes and Oxymorons suggests, an oxymoron is not a dumb person but a self-contradictory statement. As the title suggests, it contains a lot of ideas and tries to put into practice to make sonically interesting a lot of ideas about how to read poems that seem to run up against each other. On the one hand, poetry should be sincere and open and show you your own true feelings. And on the other hand, poems should always sort of hide something, should be in some sense elusive, should have a kind of puzzle component so that to reread them is to find an Easter egg, to unlock something. And the poem tries to do both of those things. And it also contains a little bit of a history of poetry in that it begins with a personal encounter between a reader who's listening and a poet and then ends up with typewriters and then looks back on itself and asks, well, why do poets need readers? Why do modern poets need readers? Do we still need readers? Do they still need readers? Yes, they do.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I wonder, is that what you look for in great poetry, sort of overall? Some of the things that you think are embodied in this very first poem from which your book takes its title?
Yes, it is. I think the best poems always have some level of emotional engagement. There's always some feeling in the poet and some feeling in the poet the reader imagines as she reads. But I also think that the best poems always have some aspect that only pops out, that only reveals itself when you read a second, a third, a fifth time, whether that's like solving a crossword puzzle or listening again to your favorite song or your favorite quartet or just getting to know another human being. There's always more there.
I'm wondering, how do you know when you're interpreting a lot of these poems, right? A lot of folks say it's really up to the reader. What makes you feel certain that your interpretation is correct, or is there even such a thing?
I don't always feel certain. Often I'm making my best guess. And the more poems I read and the more poems you read and the more you become acquainted, the more I become acquainted with other interpreters, the more ways to read I acquire and the more confidence I can have that I'm probably getting it right. But the truth is, getting to know a poem and getting a poem right isn't that different from other kinds of human activity that are interpretive and probabilistic. You can never be absolutely certain that you know what your friend meant or what your student meant or what your teacher meant. But the longer you spend with your friend, the better you get to know your friend, or perhaps the more engaged you are in a class as a teacher or a student, or even the better a basketball watcher you are, the more likely you are to say, you know, I know what my cousin, my friend from high school, or that point guard, I know what she thought she was doing.
Now, for you, for yourself, how do you think your own identity affects your judgment here? I know you identify as having two genders.
That's right.
And you prefer the pronoun they. Is that right? Yeah. So with that unique identity, what do you think it brings to your take on contemporary poetry?
Well, that is one of my identities. I'm a trans person. I've got two genders. I'm also from Washington, D.C. I'm also a university teacher. Mm-hmm. I also used to live in Minnesota. I'm also a parent. I have a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old, and we're raising them together. And all of those things make me more likely on first reading to notice certain kinds of emotions and certain kinds of ideas in poems. I seek out poems that have to do with politics, I think. I seek out poems that have to do with gender. I seek out poems that have to do with femininity, with what the great trans theorist Julia Serrano calls a femme expression. And I seek out poems about the landscapes that I know. I like cities. I like New England. I like snow. But you can't just create an anthology or a book about poems that are thematically and emotionally and demographically close to you. That's really no good at all, and especially no good because I'm also a white person. And I would be unethical and irresponsible to just fill this book with poems that reflect my own identities. One of the wonderful things about putting it together and getting from, you know, 15 candidates to 60 was how much it required me to think about how race and racial identification work in America and how much it required me to look for not just subjects but styles that reflect identities I don't have.
Do you feel like a tastemaker?
I don't know. Here are some poems. I hope they appeal to your taste.
Okay. Stephen Burt, professor of English at Harvard University and author of several books, most recently the book titled The Poem Is You, 60 Contemporary American Poems and How to Read Them. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And before we end today, just a reminder to our listeners, tomorrow we'll be back at the McCormick Graduate School at UMass Boston for the last in our series of live debates on the Massachusetts ballot questions. Tomorrow, question 4, whether to legalize recreational marijuana in Massachusetts. To attend, go to wbur.org/events, or you can listen live here at 3 p.m. tomorrow on 90.9 WBUR. That's it for today. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.